You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
For 3 years, Dane, I've wanted to have you on the podcast. It's finally here. So glad you're here, dude.
Yeah, thank you, Brad, for having me. There's no better place than where we are right now to have this conversation.
Have you said that before? I feel like this is the second take because our video guy wasn't ready.
It may have been. There's some deja vu, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
No, that's it. He wasn't ready.
It's always best the first time. Player B is always playing better.
So I know you're well traveled. I know you've been to Belize. Is this your first time in Costa Rica?
It is.
Yep. What do you think?
Man, I love it. The nature is absolutely abundant. For me, nature's always played a huge role in my life.
Because you're from the Northwest. You know, a lot of people, my brother especially, his favorite part of the country is the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. There's a lot of people that call the Northwest home, and it's always typically the older folks, the really well-traveled. They love that area in the summertime. They think it's the best in the world.
Why?
I think it's the best climate. You don't have the humidity that you do here in Costa Rica. You don't have the natural disasters either. No hurricanes, no tornadoes. You can go out in the woods and not worry about something killing you. And the ocean combined with the mountains is a picturesque scene, I think.
Plus the trees.
Yeah, they're always green. That's the evergreen state right there for us.
So I don't know where the San Andreas fault line is exactly, but does it not go up that far? That's the one in California, right?
It does run the whole West Coast, all the way up through the Aleutian Chain of Alaska. Where exactly it runs through Washington, I'm not sure. If I was a betting man, I would have to say it'd probably be somewhere near the Cascade Mountain Range, just due to the plates.
And did you grow up sports-wise, like a fan of Wazoo or UW? Oh, and then did you pull for the Seahawks or the Supersonics? You're probably not old enough for the Supersonics.
A little bit for the Sonics. I bleed purple and gold. My great uncle was the head coach of the UW in the 90s after the dog father, Don James.
Were you impressed that I said UW?
Yeah, I was.
Only because I had a few guys that played ball with me in college from there, and they referred to it as UW. Otherwise, yep. I never would have known.
Yeah, it's either going to be the University of Washington or Wisconsin, but it's always purple and gold all the way.
Yeah. What about pros?
Professional sports, I don't follow too much. I follow golf a little bit, especially the larger tournaments. But with how cyclical the UW has been with athletics, it seems like it's more of a stepping stone instead of a destination
for coaches.
Both coaches and players, and we saw that with DeBoer. I just really haven't been following. It's tough to get behind folks when the roster's constantly changing.
Well, you think you haven't been following? I don't know who DeBoer is.
Kalen DeBoer is the now University of Alabama head coach after Nick Saban stepped away.
They had another coach that left for a big program. Who was that? Sarkisian? Or, no.
Sark. Sark was. I mean, Sark's at the University of Texas now, and he did come back onto the scene.
Was he at UW?
He was.
Okay. Yep. So I didn't get that wrong.
Nope.
So where did you go to school?
I did 2 years at Bellevue College Community before joining the workforce because I didn't know what to do and I didn't want to pay a professor to tell me what to do.
Do you feel like a four-year degree isn't needed? Like you probably timed that perfectly to when the value of a four-year degree started diminishing.
I think it's to what degree are degrees useful.
Yeah.
I really think specialists is where it's needed. The generalist stuff, and if you really don't know what you want to do, I don't think you'll be able to find it as well as, say, actually doing stuff in the workforce rather than taking on debt to learn because you have the internet now and it's prevalent and you have people you can reach out to from across the world to ask questions and
get perspective. Have you done that before?
Oh, I mean, this is a product. This is a product. And it's worked for me in the past. It's provided amazing insight that I didn't have to pay $59,000 for 1 year for someone that may not have even done what they're teaching.
That's an interesting point. So one of the most impressive things about you is you're so ambitious that you were willing to pick up and move across the country from Washington State. Are you from Bellevue?
No, born and raised in a small town called Ferndale, north of Bellingham, Washington, in the very northwest corner, pretty much Canada.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you were willing to pick up and move after you went to a retreat in Belize, is that correct?
It was. It was a conference in Belize.
And who did you meet, and what prompted you to move all the way across the country? Because you moved to Massachusetts, right?
I did, rural western Massachusetts. It was Dr. Chris Martinson. I met him in Belize at a taco shack.
He's famous now.
He's very well known. He's very well known. He's a phenomenal man, someone I admire and look up to, and a lot of others do.
And what makes him famous? Like, why have I heard of him?
So, Chris is world class at sifting through information and really getting to the truth. And a lot of very, very high profile individuals recognize that and appreciate it. So those folks are a couple of names being Brett Weinstein. You have.
Do you get to meet him?
Oh, yeah. Brett's phenomenal. I've sat on a couple meetings with Brett, listened in on a couple of conversations, and he's the exact same person that you see on the Rogan shows.
He explains things so well. Mm-hmm. He is so articulate and so smart. He's an evolutionary biologist. Is that right?
Correct. His ability to take a complex topic and break it down into layman's terms and then provide various aspects of that one topic to draw connections to so people can actually relate to what he is trying to communicate, it's second to none.
Yeah. One of my favorite Joe Rogan episodes is when he had Brett Weinstein and his wife, Heather Hying, on. Mm-hmm. So they gave the male and female perspective. I need to go back and re-listen to that because it's been probably 5-6 years yeah. since that episode aired. Man, so it was probably worth it for you just for the connections to move across the country. And you actually lived with Dr. Chris Martinson, correct?
Mm-hmm. I did. I lived on the homestead there in Massachusetts. And the connections were phenomenal. But for me, it was really perspective. It snapped everything into perspective of what hard work is, what hard work actually is.
Because he exemplified it for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That man, the hours and effort that he puts into his people and the community of Peak Prosperity, it's incredible. And it provided me a level of which I aspire to, that I'm able to work towards, that allowed me to see behind the curtains of what world-class effort and sacrifice really is to your craft.
That's really cool. So he created peakprosperity.com, mm-hmm. which is equivalent to, like, that's his manoverseas.com on a exactly. larger scale. Okay.
Exactly.
And a lot of content creators don't take it very seriously. So you were able to see him with the work ethic of somebody that is an entrepreneur, runs his own operation, mm-hmm. and really gets after it.
Oh, yes. It was rigorous. His data consumption, his reporting, the amount of sources he has to go through, because you can't just read one report on something and take that as truth. You have to fact check that and constantly bounce ideas off of other people, figure out who's actually in that space that is experiencing that worldly event in real time to try to get to that person, receive the information, and then be able to portray that message to his audience, which may not have that same background that he does, which is so in depth of various topics, whether it's economics, the energy markets, socio-political environment, geopolitical environment. It's incredible how many wide-ranging topics he can cover.
So did you so impress him when you met him? How many days was this retreat?
This was a 10-day retreat, and I met him before the first day. And I believe it was my willingness to stick my neck out and introduce myself and be vulnerable in discussion, because we immediately went deep into discussion. It wasn't, hey, how are you doing? How do you like the sand? It was, I can't believe the male and female dynamics of my generation.
Sounds like my kind of discussion. We've spent some time talking about that.
Just a few minutes.
Yeah, I was joking last night when I gave my talk to you guys that I've probably spent 500 hours with each of you, and that's just a random guess. But when you figure 45 minutes to an hour once a week for several years, it really adds up. So I'm just getting to meet you for the first time, mm-hmm. and what a treat, because when you talk to somebody that much, you feel like you know them, and then to finally get to meet them and you get to see how they interact with others and how they walked, how they conduct themselves, and then you're just on a whole nother level.
It really is. And for me, I think that feeling and that connection is what puts the pin through the balloon of remote work.
Oh, explain that.
I really think that when you're working fully remote as an organization, you don't get the same production level. You don't get the same connection that you do with your coworkers, colleagues, bosses, and inferior coworkers that you would if you're at the office, whether that's one day a week or you're there 7 days a week, 24/7, 365.
I'll buy that. So who's the pen? What's the balloon?
The balloon is that remote work is here to stay, and this is going to be the new norm. I really think that companies, and we're seeing it now, we're seeing the shift of larger corporations calling back employees into the office because they're realizing that they are able to get a better product from their employees, and they're able to have a better connection within the team organization to create that culture, that brotherhood like we have here, of individuals that are seeing each other face to face. You can give someone a hug, you can give someone a high five, pat on the back, handshake. And I think that's even more profound when things go awry, because they do. Every single day, things are going to go wrong. And how do you react to that?
Yeah, I once worked for a guy. I was a telephone monkey, basically. You just sit there and dial the phone with your paws or whatever monkeys have. And if you had a good quarter, I think if you finished like top 10% in sales reps or something, they would let you work a couple of days from home. And this was way before the work from home movement. And so it was kind of a big deal to let your employees work from home. And it made you feel autonomy and that they respected you and that you're dependable and reliable. You're going to hit the phones like you would if you were inside the office. And I remember my boss telling me one time, he said, "Oh, if I worked from home, I'd just watch Netflix all day. I could never do it." And I thought, I can't believe I'm working for a guy who couldn't have the discipline to not watch Netflix and to get after it at home. So I do think that some people, depending on how they're wired, will actually get more work done when there are no distractions. Me, for example, when I'm at the office, yes, there's a time to get after it and there's a time to have water cooler talk or whatever, but I like to talk to people. So my water cooler talk might be 10 minutes, and I actually think it'll be a productive 10 minutes, but I don't have those distractions at home, and I'm much more likely to work more hours at home than I would in the office. But there's a reason that those people end up being your top people who earn the right to work from home, right? So I never had a problem working from home, although I do prefer to be around people. And even with what I do today, sometimes I'll go to a co-working space, not just because it's hard to work with my four-year-old running around if she's home. But I like the camaraderie. I like bouncing ideas off of people. And if I do have a day in an office by myself, because there's not a lot of people around, I will try to arrange lunch with somebody, and that works real well. I mean, it's amazing. Like my social skills actually got rusty following COVID, and I know a lot of people suffered from that. But I remember going on a double date with my wife, and we left dinner, and this was probably like, I don't know, February 21, and we were leaving dinner in the car and talking to each other like, we're rusty. Like our social skills have diminished. And so it's crazy. It's like if you're going to be a business person, which you are, you're an entrepreneur, you really have to practice those skills. And I'm even convinced like the Warren Buffetts, Donald Trumps of the world, like Donald Trump, for example, he might not read a lot of books, but he has a lot of conversations. And I think we discount how much smarter, how much you can learn just from having conversations with people, which is a lot of what this retreat is about. You know, we stayed up late last night after our talks, just giving different perspectives. And one of the things I most appreciate about this retreat is how diverse it is. Not skin color. I don't give a shit about anybody's skin color. I'm talking about diverse perspectives from different parts of the country, different marital statuses. You got one guy who's divorced. You got two guys who are about to get engaged. You got me. I've been married 7 years. You got you who's totally got, you've got your head down, not trying to date right now. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I really think it's tough to win on all fronts of life. All simultaneously. You're fighting multiple battles that are worthy. They're really wars. When it comes to your health, when it comes to your career, your relationship. For me personally, I don't have a lot of external responsibilities in the form of a spouse, significant other, child, in terms of family or housing situations. So it allows me to be really lean and limber, and I want to lean into that. So for me, if I pour all of my time and energy into one aspect of my life that I know if I can get that to a point in which if it's sustained over a significant period of time, I can focus all my energy, time, and effort into a different area of my life at that time and pour myself into it to build up that area while the other area sustains itself. And for me, when I was reflecting on this period of transition, I thought there's no better time than the present to start a business, take that financial risk, take the risk of creating something that will then hopefully turn into an asset. I can become more of a owner instead of an employee that will then pay me dividends, both figuratively and literally, for years to come, that will allow me to focus more on the relationship side, especially only being at the age of 26. I know that I have 10 plus years of prime time for me in the dating sphere.
Is this dude impressive at 26 or what? I like that. So I remember not being able to have my dating game and my business game succeeding at the same time. It always seemed like yin and yang, one thing's going right and the other's not. Is that kind of why you put the other on hold? Because I do think there are transferable skills from being an entrepreneur and selling yourself and your product or your service and what do the kids call it these days? Having a little bit of riz? Is that?
I believe so.
believe that's what they call it?
I'm not the one to confirm, but I believe so.
Well, I remember you telling me one time you went out one night and you attracted some women by doing the gritty. And I said, what the hell is the gritty? And you said, oh, that's Justin Jefferson. I said, I should know that. I was a big LSU fan when they were winning the national championship with Burrow and Jamar Chase and the dude doing the gritty. That thing took off, right? I mean, it caught on around the country. Everybody was doing it. Oh, yeah. So tell me about doing the gritty in the bar.
Just let loose. That's really what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I had a guy telling me that he knew that a woman wasn't marriage material when he was dancing with her and she was looking around to see who was looking at her.
Oh, man.
And that's the biggest faux pas of your dance. You got to dance like nobody's looking. And it tells me, like him, I agree with him, like, can your woman get in the moment and not care so much what people think? Mm-hmm. And this podcast is kind of about that. You and I are just having a discussion.
Yep.
I don't care what the cameraman thinks. Fuck him. Just kidding. He's doing a good job. Oh, Marcus. He's getting a shout out in every episode, it seems like. Mm-hmm. I should be paying him less.
I think going back to your original question, which was what really went into that decision for me, it's trying to become the person that I hope to attract. And with building a business, it's very much a roller coaster. And I do want someone has to appreciate the work. However, when the business is built and I know that it's in a solid position where I myself have the conviction and the certainty that I know that this thing is going to last decades instead of days, because we're still early on. It's only been a year and a half. Until I believe truly that this will be able to benefit the community long term, I don't feel I can cast that off into the dating world. Because I don't know if it's fully a part of my identity yet, because there's so much uncertainty still as a young entrepreneur in the game.
So do you not have enough downtime to maybe long for companionship?
No, definitely not. When working in the operations side, especially in property management, there's not a lot of downtime because it's filled up with the business side of things. Because at some point, you have to work on the business rather than in it. And so, it's really a dance for me between both to make sure that the business is constantly growing, but the product is not suffering.
And you're doing property management, correct?
Correct. I do residential property management in Bellingham, Washington, less than 4 units, unfurnished, looking for folks that want to rent their home or property long-term, not short-term.
And when you say 40 units, I thought you
less had... Less than 4.
4?
Less than 4 units. Yeah. Like less than a 4-unit building, less than a 4-plex.
That's who you market yourself to?
Correct. If it's over a 4-plex, I turn it away and recommend they go elsewhere.
So you're managing 90 doors, you told me?
Correct.
So does that mean... Let me do the math... 22 different clients if you have 4 units?
No, this is the property type. So I turn away folks. If you come to me as an owner and you say, hey, I have a 7-unit building, can you take this on for management? I'll say, sorry, Brad, won't be able to do that for you. It's not in our business model. I recommend you go to this property manager. But if you come to me and say, hey, I've got 12 single family homes, I'd like you to take on my portfolio. Great. Be happy to help you. We love working with the single family homes.
Why is that? Why do you do it that way?
It's two different business models. So the apartment model is based on your cap rate. It's the performance of the property. It's not the condition of the property. The single family home is going to be based more so on market conditions, the actual condition of the property, not necessarily how it's performing. And in my local market, I believe that Bellingham has overbuilt apartments. I don't believe that they have quite absorbed in the market fully. They aren't building single family homes because in this market, you have the ocean and then you have the mountain range. They can't build south, west, or east. They can only go north, and they're going north with apartments. So the single family home is sought after. I'm able to put the single family home on the market, market that thing, get a high quality resident in there that's going to stay hopefully for years if we're doing our job correctly. And I don't have to touch the property ever again. I'm able to maintain that property for the owner while I then can step out and begin to grow the business even further. Versus the apartment model, you have so much more time on the marketing sphere because you have so much more competition. It's simply supply and demand. You have a massive supply of apartments, a low demand for them compared to the single family homes. And for me, I know my time is so precious because it's just myself. I'm a solopreneur. So I need to allocate my resources accordingly. So if I chose the apartment model, I can't say for certainty, but I don't believe that I would have the same amount of time that I do now to be able to work on the business instead of in the business.
What made you want to get into that? You seem really passionate about it.
I am. I think, for one, when I was in that reflection period for me and the transition.
Sorry. What is your reflection period?
The reflective period. It's when I transitioned from peak prosperity and I was trying to figure out what the next endeavor would be.
Oh, so from when you were working in Massachusetts.
Correct. So it was that period when I was trying to decide what's the thing that I'm going to sink my teeth into for the next decade. Because I had been going from job to job previously, building up skills because I didn't take the college route, but I wanted real world education. And for me, it happened to line up in the real estate space. So I asked myself, journaled, reflected, meditated, talked to others. For me, I felt my skill set best suited the property management sphere and what I'm able to offer with the knowledge that I have from previous jobs that I can then translate over into this business without having to completely learn a new industry like medical sales, where I have not a single baseline understanding of that industry.
Wow, that's impressive. How do you plan to scale the business? What's the goal? You have 90 doors. Are you hoping for 270, like a 3X, or what are you thinking?
As big as the business wants to get, the business will get. For me, it's all about the quality of the product. It's the service. It's creating the culture where the highest quality employee wants to work. For me, this is really a advantageous position because I've taken care of myself in my own housing situation. I've kept my expenses extremely low that I can pump cash into the business and reinvest and save to build this product that's worth buying, worth being a part of, and worth working for. To have that mission that we're going to create a far superior management service for both owner clients and residents that people want to be a part of it. And so however big that business wants to get with people that are wanting to come on and help the mission, whether it be a client or a possible colleague, I'm going to let the thing run. I'm not going to have the goal of a lagging indicator, whether it's 500,000, 2,000, 5,000, because if I create the best service I possibly can, the rest takes care of itself. It's creating that product.
And at what point would you no longer be a solopreneur?
From folks that I've interviewed around the industry that I really admire what they've done, they've said 150 doors roughly is when other folks need to be coming on the boat to help out. And that's kind of when it pushes beyond one person's control in terms of time, especially with working on the business. So I think 150 is probably going to be that point where I'm able to bring on someone that's more of a specialist in an area that I can then offload a part of the business to and allow them to grow in that position as I then continue to pump the business in terms of clients and bring people on and onboard.
And what's your marketing strategy? Is it more social media focused? Or because I think you'd be great in person.
So I would love more in-person interactions. The issue is the owners are typically out of town. So they're living across the country. They're living across the seas. And I don't get a lot of FaceTime when an owner is local. Man, I take advantage of that.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat. I love it. It fuels me up. So unfortunately, it's not as frequent as I would like. My marketing strategy to let people know about my service is direct mail. Direct mail is the number one for me.
Snail mail,
postcards. The reason why is because it's so targeted.
You could send them some from here.
I could send them some from anywhere.
But here's a good spot.
It's quite nice.
I'll say. This isn't a painting.
No, it is not. That's not a green screen.
That's cool, man. I'm really, really impressed because I can remember when we started working together, you were working in mortgage servicing, correct?
Correct.
And you've since moved to Massachusetts, moved back to Washington State,
mm-hmm.
and you're not yet 30, right?
I got 4 more years.
You're only 26. That's really impressive, dude. How did COVID impact you? Like, were you in Massachusetts at that time?
No. How would you define which years? Is this 2020? Is this 2020 to 22?
Yes.
The latter?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those were some of the most influential years for me because I was in retail banking at the time. Originally, I wanted to get into mortgage lending, and I realized I had to work my way up because I went to the bank. I got a bank teller job and realized that I learned nothing about mortgages working as a bank teller. So I had to work my way up, and I started that in 2019, winter of 2019.
How much money you make as a bank teller?
That was $18 an hour at the time.
That's not bad.
No. It's not bad, and you get the banker's hours. But anyway, that was the job that I started in winter of 2019. 3 months later, the whole world's shutting down, except for the banking industry, of course. And I'm getting told that you're going to be going up into an office. Here's a headset. You got to take calls because we have angry members calling in about finances and all this stuff because people were so emotional. They're so emotional. They're charged up about what's going on in the world. And then you add money on top of that and it just blew up. And so I'll never forget, I had Chris Voss's negotiation book next to me, all inked up. And I would have my... Never split the difference. And I would have my headset on. In between calls, I would be reading my notes through that book because it was helping me translate what Chris was teaching in the book over to my calls because these people were so fired up. So I had to calm them down, for one, to get them into a more rational state and then begin to persuade them towards what's going to be the best solution for that person.
Is there a book that's been most impactful for you?
It's been a series of books. On this trip, I found my book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I dusted that one off because I really believe that it's not how many books you read, it's how many times you read the book that really instills a level of understanding that others can't get when you read a ton of books because you're a different person every time you open up that book. Every few years, if you open up How to Win Friends and Influence People, it's going to impact you differently based on your experiences that you've had in those last few years.
The last book I read that I finished before I got here was A Story is a Deal by Will Storr. And it talks about the importance of storytelling and how, going back to hunter-gatherer days, the guys who were most respected were those that could tell a good story around the campfire. And I'm really big into storytelling. I tell a lot of stories. So that was a lot of help for me. If I had to choose another book that I would read in preparation for a retreat, it would be How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. I like going back and rereading that book because it motivates me. It makes me want to do good for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have it fresh in your mind, if you're in the line of work that I am, you can, of course, share that with others. And I get joy and fulfillment from sharing that sort of message, not just doing things for people, but sharing with others what's in the book. And I remember when I first started talking about that book, it was the most mentioned book on the podcast after about 50 episodes, let's say. Mm. So I've gotten a lot of people reading it, and everybody I've never heard anybody that doesn't like that book. So it's really impactful. It's, and you know, it's one of those that has stood the test of time, right? It's what, 100 years old, probably?
Dale Carnegie is. I think it's a little bit over now. A little bit over 100.
What do you make of this retreat so far? Be honest. If you don't like it, you can tell me.
I think it's incredible. I really do. And the reason why, I mean, I'm not just saying that to glaze you here and butter you up partially.
I'm already buttered. Put some sun, what do they call that? The banana boat?
Yeah, that's the banana boat.
Oh, yeah, to bronze your tan.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I haven't taken my shirt off yet. I don't want to embarrass you young kids, you know?
I don't need that.
I've had more time to work out than you have.
My confidence is riding high, so I don't need that for this trip.
I'll keep my shirt on.
I've really enjoyed it because I think when you get a bunch of guys in an area outside of their comfort zone and you welcome vulnerable conversation, great things will come.
And there's been nothing but vulnerable conversation. Mm-hmm. There was one dude last night, and I'm sure you remember, he opened up to us and people were like, I have never heard that take before. I'm going to have him on the podcast and I'm going to ask him for that take because it is so unique, but he's got a very unique background. I really appreciate the diversity of opinion and life experiences of this place. So I'm glad to hear you say that, and thank you for the compliment. I don't feel any more buttered up than I was before.
The thing
so
that
you need to flatter me more, dude.
I'll try. The thing that I'm most looking forward to, and you mentioned that talk, is the talk for me. I don't get a lot of public speaking time now in the role that I'm doing. So when I have these types of opportunities, I love to seize them. And I think storytelling is one of the most powerful skills that one can have. Mm-hmm. It is innate to human nature. It's studying native culture. It was paramount. It was core to being able to raise kids within the tribe and get them up to speed in a very prompt manner to where they are providing for the tribe. And there is no better way than story. Sitting around the campfire, sitting around in a group, and portraying a story that's going to instill some sort of lesson or value that that person can then reflect on and look back on. For me, storytelling is the most powerful tool, and being able to exercise that in a group of guys that are going to give you honest feedback that has no biases, no judgment cast on it, it's something you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. So for listeners, one of the things I have them do in addition to giving a talk to the group, I hand out little sheets of paper, and anonymously, as long as nobody recognizes the other's handwriting, which shouldn't happen, I have them write down two things that they did really well, and if there was one thing that they could improve upon, what would that be? So since we have about 10 of us here, they'll get that feedback on little sheets of paper and hopefully improve their talks. And as you know, I'm a big proponent of reference selling when you're selling a product or service, letting them know, you know, your customer who's very similar to you uses this product. And the other thing about storytelling I find interesting is people have trouble tuning out when there's a good story being told, and even dialogue. So even in a book, for example, if you write dialogue, somebody might read the first sentence of a paragraph and scan a page even. But if there are quotes, they almost always pay attention to the dialogue.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think when it comes from an individual or a person in the form of a story, ears perk up?
I think it's how we're wired. And I think it goes back to sitting around the fire. Mm-hmm. I really do. And I think you may have heard me say this before, but where men get addicted to pornography, women are into naked lives. Meaning they watch reality TV.
Oh.
They're into social media. There are women that have probably looked at every single picture you have on social media, if she likes you. My mom likes me. I would bet a lot of money she's looked at every picture I have. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just something about a window into somebody's life. We're just interested in other humans. You know, when you have a blog or you post on social media, the pictures get a lot more attention. And people like faces. Those get clicked on more. So there's something that we all relate to. Everybody's got a face, right?
Right. And that's something that I've paid a lot more attention to recently. I've done more reading into what it's like to rear a child and the importance of child rearing and how do children interact with mothers and fathers. And the smile is the most important thing for a child, whether the child's reflecting the smile back to the parent or vice versa. It's almost a sense of approval in a way with that smile.
Yes. My daughter, when she was a baby, smiled at me. She returned my smile 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And that brought me so much joy. And what I tell people is that people think that people often judge a person's character by how dogs or kids treat them. But if you want to enhance or if you want to increase the likelihood that a child is going to like you, you need to express a genuine smile.
Okay.
Meaning use your eyes to smile. Because just as women are much more perceptive to body language and facial expressions, they read it a lot better than we do. Kids are that same way because they're babies, because they're helpless. Mm-hmm. And so they're reading your face so that they can, they're looking for security and safety and nurturing. And so when you can flash them that genuine smile, they tend to like you. And that's just something it's not something I read. That's my lived experience.
Right.
So yeah. I encourage people to do that.
I'm really curious your take on this. I don't think we've talked about this on this trip or at any time at all. I was listening to a clip of Andrew Tate, and he was talking about how your smile is your asset. You shouldn't smile too much because then it becomes the norm. You should retract your smile until the smile is actually worthy of being given to someone else. What's your perspective on that thought train?
Not as it pertains to kids.
No. This is in the sense of a working environment or interacting with friends or a relationship per se.
Yeah, I've never heard that before, but you wouldn't want to walk into a room smiling, you know, having a shitting grin on your face because people would think you're stupid. So I wouldn't do that. It's also been said that women are more attracted to men when they're not smiling, believe it or not.
I have not heard that.
Yeah, I mean, a smile is attractive to any human. But overall, when women are shown faces of a man smiling versus a man looking stern, she's more attracted to the stern-looking man, believe it or not.
Do you believe it's more of a sense of power? That individual holds power and they...
Well, how far back do you want to go in terms of women being attracted to the man who can be violent when needed, secure resources, mm-hmm. protect her, conquer?
That's day one stuff right there.
Yeah. And he doesn't have to be laughing himself in order to make her laugh. Mm-hmm. Women like to laugh. How many men say, I just want a woman who can make me laugh? Zero. But maybe 100% of women say that, right?
Right.
Yeah, men and women are different, I think.
They are. I'm not even sure why we're the same species.
Well, they're not a similar sex. They're the opposite sex.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so interesting you bring that up. I think about this a lot, obviously, but I think of smiling with reference to what you said, and I had never heard that before. But since I tend to agree with it, I would think giving a smile is comparable to giving a compliment. And therefore, it should be used sparingly. Ooh, I smile at a lot of people, but although I've never consciously thought about this, I only smile at people who I perceive to be worthy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can tell a lot about a person by looking at them. And I'll tell you this, I don't think I've ever shared this before. I will smile at people who don't smile back. And my first thought is, oh, sucks for them. Because when you share a smile with somebody, it's uplifting to both parties.
Right.
And do you know that even if you force a smile, as long as it's genuine, using your eyes, it uplifts your mood. A lot of people don't know that, but there's something in our brain to where some people, like there are certain parts of your brain that light up when you're pissed. And so people enjoy being pissed. And if you ask them to smile, they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them struggle to express a genuine smile when they're pissed anyway. But I'm just saying it'll help. We were at a restaurant the other night, and our waitress, my buddies, a couple of you guys thought she was cute. And they asked my opinion, and I said, well, she'd be better if she smiled. And leave it to me, she heard me. And she returned with a bottle of water for one of the guys, and when she handed it to him, she smiled real sweetly and genuinely. And I thought, I did a good deed by loud capping her. That's what we used to call it back in the day. What do they call it now? What does cap mean? Does that mean you're lying? No yeah. cap means yeah. no lie?
Yeah.
Where did that start?
You're asking the wrong guy.
There are a lot of new expressions I'm just catching up to. That's the sort of shit that makes you feel old, Dane, just to let you know.
I've already experienced that. It seems like it changes by the day almost. With how quickly. That.
But yeah, it does change quick. Hell, I'm wearing socks that are pulled up to my calves now, and I didn't do that for the last 20 years. Why am I doing that?
It's a great question.
Because it's trendy.
Yep.
I think my wife bought me these socks. She's younger than me.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring back Jesus sandals.
I'm trying to bring back Jesus.
Yeah. We need a lot more of that.
We need a lot more Jesus.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? Have you been following much on the geopolitical environment over in the Middle East?
No, I don't follow world events at all, Dane. No.
Really?
In fact, my name is something like Domestic Man Overseas.
Really? Interesting.
I mean, I'm sorry. Domestic Man in the contiguous U.S. He doesn't leave... It doesn't leave the states. But yeah, do you have a question? Because I like to talk about geopolitical stuff.
I mean, my greatest concern right now in watching what's gone on is all of the military assets that we're placing towards Iran. I've always come from the philosophy that we just need to begin reinvesting back into our own people rather than placing so much weight and energy over the pond.
Well, yeah, nationalism had become a bad word for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to say again, and they would tack on the Christian in front of the nationalism. Mm-hmm. And it was all bullshit for the most part. Domestic terrorism was not a problem, but our government made a lot of effort to target domestic terrorism, and it was mostly just an ideology where they could censor what they called hate speech in order to further their ideology.
Yep.
I think that's being dismantled, which is a good thing. As far as Iran, if they're funding these proxies, whether it's the Houthis or Hamas, it doesn't matter. Hezbollah, we got to do something about it in combination with Israel, I think.
Yeah. Are you going to be traveling over in that area anytime soon? Not necessarily Iran, but Europe, Eastern Europe, any of those places?
We'll be in Warsaw for a month, which is not a far train ride from Ukraine. And so we may go to Lviv, not Kiev. Lviv is on the western side. And I think sharing this, I'll get some hate mail and say telling me not to do it because I have a young daughter. Mm-hmm. Because there has been one missile attack in Lviv. It was like September 23rd, 2023.
Okay.
So how long has that war been going on? 3 years, something like that? So there's been one attack in that town, and 7 people died, including 2 children. So people think I would be stupid to take my family to Western Ukraine, and I probably won't, but I'll tell you that I'm tempted because I've always wanted to go to Ukraine, and I was going to go to Kiev when I started traveling back in 2015, and I didn't. So I missed my opportunity. Sorry, what was your question? Yeah, I'll be in Poland for most of the summer, actually. Yeah. And Poland's about as close to that action as you can get. It borders with Ukraine.
Yeah, being in those areas provides you such a different perspective. And it's something I never really appreciated until actually doing it. And this is a prime example of this trip, is being able to get into an environment that is so foreign to me. And seeing how people interact and the lives that they live, it gives me a whole different respect for back home in the States. And that's another big part as to why I've chosen to go the business route to start, because my hope is to be able to do a Man Overseas 2.0 trip or series or segment of my life where I can dedicate a year, 2 years, whatever I feel like at that time, to go visit various places in the world.
Well, if I were to license the rights to Man Overseas and let you do a 2.0, you would be the first person I would allow to do that. And then I'll get some of the other guys to do a 3.0.
Man, I'm honored.
And a 4.0. But I don't know how that's going to work with your domain name, because that's hard to do with a .com.
That will be tough, but I'm just honored to be able to work through the beta version for you. They can handle the rest.
Are you a beta?
No, certainly not.
Does any man ever say, I'm a beta?
I think from parts of area that I'm from, they do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because you're close to Portland and Seattle.
Just Western Washington in general.
A lot of little bitches over there.
Yeah. Little weenies. But I don't weenies. Like I don't like that. I don't shop at Weenie Hut Jr. That's not my cup of tea.
Why are there so many weenies nowadays? Is it the feminized culture?
I think it's because we don't have actual problems in this world.
And they create their own?
Yeah. You create your own conflicts. You fight invisible enemies. That's what I think personally, because you don't really, from what I've seen, ambitious young men have deteriorated, which for me, it's great because the bar is so darn low that the level from good to great might just be a little hop. And I think that we're seeing it almost exacerbated by social media. I believe that if you didn't have the prevalence of media sources to where at a swipe of a thumb, you can figure out what's going on in all parts of the world, I think it would be a little more compartmentalized in various pockets and various areas versus it just spreading like wildfire, like other ideas do.
Do you think that women assess their own value or self-worth based on how much their opinion agrees with the collective of women? And maybe men value themselves based on the contrary opinion or how they're not susceptible to groupthink and consensus, whereas women seek consensus? Do you think that's a truism, or did I just come up with that and it's a stupid, retarded opinion?
I don't think it's retarded.
The R word's back, and we just brought it back, and I like it.
I do as well. I believe that you have to see someone's actions to be able to derive what their belief system is. And when I watch women, they'll never not ask fellow women what their opinion is, whether it's about their attire, whether it's about what they should eat, whether it's about a potential significant other. I think they put a lot of weight into their decision from others. When you compare and contrast that to the male dynamic between other males, I think guys are certainly more independent and forward-thinking, and it's complementary to the women's perspective, because I believe you come together as one. It's the yin and the yang, and a lot of other cultures have had that sort of symbolism to where both parties come together to form one that complement each other and work as a dance. I mean, we were talking about dancing a little bit, and it's a dance. You're going back and forth, strengths and weaknesses, and you have to live with that other person's qualms while still being able to respect those qualms. And we talked about dating last night, and I think that is completely lost in the dating sphere, is respecting and really cherishing someone's qualms, because it makes them quirky. It makes them unique. It's not the perfect Clark Kent Superman. No, that person actually has some downfall, but that's what makes them them. Because if you didn't have those perks, you didn't have those qualms, there'd be no contrast. The benefits of that person wouldn't stand out as much because they didn't have the downfalls. And we as humans derive meaning from things with contrast. Dark, light, sunny, cloudy, cold, hot, attractive, not attractive, like to be around the person, not like to be around the person. Whatever it is, the contrast gives us meaning.
Yeah, it'd be hard to be joyful if you hadn't been miserable, and nor would you appreciate the joy had you not been miserable, right?
Exactly.
You want to do fun questions?
I'd love to.
I just started this back up, so I haven't done fun questions in a while. But let me ask you, if you could create a national holiday, like a new holiday, that celebrates a unique aspect of human nature, what would it be? Like, I want to give credence. I want to expose this as a true quality of humans. And it's so important that we're going to take a day to celebrate it where the kids don't go to school.
Mm-hmm. I would do something along the lines of Revolution Day, when the original Americans decided to do away with the British Empire over a 1% tea tax. And I would try to honor that and that courage to say, no, we're not going to be paying a tax on our tea that is 1%.
would you make that day in July, maybe between January or July 3rd and July 5th?
I would put it towards the end. I think the 4th of July has a great representation of that. But I would want to have more of a sense of what the country used to be and something around those values, whether it is family related with the nuclear family, whether it is no taxation without representation, whether it is the right to defend oneself, all these values that make America so unique and special. I would want to bring that back in a more targeted way, because I think the 4th of July is very broad and very general, and it kind of does away with the meaning to where folks now are just wanting to light up fireworks, myself included, and not really dive into what made America so amazing and get back to those values.
Do you think the value of July 4th is diminished by the hot dog eating contest in the same way that Christmas is sometimes diminished by all the presents?
Agreed. I fully agree. I think we've lost a lot of meaning and value to where people aren't reflecting on what those holidays truly mean and taking time and taking pause from their day to reflect.
So you think there's an absence of meaning?
Yeah. And maybe that's the holiday. Bring back meaning.
How many hot dogs could you eat at one time?
I think I've put down 8.
8 hot dogs?
Yeah.
Jumbo?
No. Just
footlongs?
Regulars.
Not impressive. Yeah. Regulars.
Yeah.
All right. If you could switch lives with somebody wholesale on Monday so that you get to experience what a day in the life of that person is, who would it be? And would you have sex with your wife that night?
What wife?
What person?
One person switching the day in life. It's got to be Michelangelo.
Michelangelo?
Yeah. Or Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay, so after you lay in the coffin on Monday, what are you going to do all day in the coffin?
Oh, because he's dead. Gotcha. So it has to be present day.
Well, you're doing it Monday.
Oh, jeez.
You want me to reframe the question to fit your answer?
I was hoping for a more broad sense here, but let's narrow that down. I'm going to go with, right now, it's either going to be Alex Hormozi. Nope. I'm going to go Naval Ravikant.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah.
I've got to
be Naval.
Do you want to have sex that night with your wife?
He's someone I really admire with what we talked about at the very beginning.
I'm not talking about spending a day with him. I'm talking about being him.
Oh my gosh.
So see what his day is like. You have to conduct yourself as him throughout the day. I'm going to have to come up with a new question.
Yeah, that one's brutal. I mean, if I have to be one man for a day, it's got to be
Elon. A different man. Jesus Christ. I've got to reword this question.
Elon Musk, final answer, moving on.
Yeah? He's got a lot going on.
A ton going on.
You want to be inside his brain for a day?
Yeah.
You just want to make a 15th baby. I just need to take
a piece of that gene code. That's all I need.
Yeah. Is he impressive?
He's very impressive. I think he's one of the most prolific entrepreneurs that we've seen in our time.
That's an understatement. Do you think he's one of the most impressive humans to ever live with all he's done for humanity?
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that his wealth is commensurate with the value he's provided for humanity?
I agree. And he
voices it. No, that was a question.
Yeah.
You're not good at these fun questions, Dane.
No, I'm not.
I'm just messing with you. I'm messing with Dane. He's one of my favorite guys. We've been working together a long time, and he knows I'm messing with him.
Next question.
That's what I was going to say. What's the coolest thing anybody's ever done for you?
Give me a hug.
That's it? Dude, I gave you a hug when you got here.
I know.
That was special.
That was the coolest thing that's ever happened.
It was one of the coolest things ever. Okay, what's the second coolest thing besides the hug I gave you?
Second coolest thing someone's ever done for me. I think this goes synonymous between all of my teachers, is that they've poured their absolute hearts into me without knowing any sort of benefit that they would be getting, whether it be Mr. Bruce when I was just coming out of high school, whether it be Dr. Martinson, whether it be yourself, all these people that have been on this planet before me and have lived a longer life that is one that I hope to replicate, they've opened up their teachings and sat down, given me their precious time on this earth to answer any question, to help me with any problem that I'm currently going through. And it's something I'm so grateful for. And when an older person does that, whether it's yourself or Mr. Bruce or Chris, it's just, man, I can't be more thankful for it.
Well, that's music to my ears. I hope you express that to them, because it's one thing for somebody to say, I really like what you do, thank you. But when they tell you how it meaningfully has impacted their life, it's something special. And I don't know that I've ever shared with you what I get out of our interactions, but it's very fulfilling to me to see how you've developed since we first started talking to sitting here on this podcast. Yeah, it fills me with the warm and cozies, as my daughter would say. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, if you were transported into the future, let's say the year 2125, 100 years from now, and you could take any two things with you, but it couldn't be like clothes or money, because your money would be inflated away anyway. Mm-hmm. And who knows if the United States would still be here. So you'd kind of be predicting what the world would look like 100 years from now. But you'd have to take two things with you from now. What would those two things be?
Can they be, are they tangible or intangible?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go with humanity.
You're going to take humanity with you?
Take humanity with me.
We're going to, cameraman, can we start these questions over again? He's been doing awesome. We get to the fun questions, and I feel like it's been a downward spiral.
No, let me think about it. Let me play this one out. Humanity, because we have a push towards artificial intelligence. We have a push towards technology. We have stuff that's fundamentally, to me, anti-human. You have – we talked about Elon Musk. I really respect what he's doing, but I don't like the Neuralink push of putting chips in people's brains and beginning to take what God created, the human being, the embodiment of God – and deviating from that, whether it be the 74 vaccines at the beginning of a childbirth, where we say, hey, let me take your God-given child and pump 74 rounds of vaccines into it because it's not perfect as it is. So I've seen a push away from humanity in the past 10 years that I've been actually paying attention that I think, and I would hope, begins to revert back to more humanity, to where we can allow God back into the family. We can create the nuclear family again, and we can really celebrate the human being as it is during the birth of a child, rather than saying it needs to be adjusted because it's not perfect the way that that thing is coming out. So for me, I believe that the push away from humanity is why I would choose to bring humanity along into the future.
He totally redeemed himself. What that prompted me to think about is that when we go to war and we develop technologies to fight those wars, and then there ends up being benefits for society, like wasn't penicillin developed as the result of a war or something? So when I think about Neuralink, he's cured blindness, or he's in the process from what I understand, and that may be one of the benefits, because I don't think Neuralink was designed that way. But we'll probably, maybe negative externalities, get to a point where you can read people's thoughts, and that might be bad.
Everything has its trade-offs.
Yeah.
Everything has its trade-offs. And I would ask folks, and even myself, I put myself in a blind man's shoes. Is that a bad thing, being born with blindness? I don't know. I think those that are blind, in this sense that we're talking in, have a heightened sense of hearing. They have a unique perspective. We've had many talented individuals in this world that have been blind, that have been able to provide incredible things to humanity that a normal individual with all five senses may not have been able to contribute. And I think that if someone is born the way that they're born, they have a unique set of gifts. And we talked about this last night, that that person can bring into the world and share through their authentic light, that not every individual has the ability to do so. And if we're willing to forego those unique, authentic traits of an individual to create synonymous beings that don't have any quirks, any unique features, it's someone that's perfect, what's the difference between that and a robot? Especially if it's controllable. And if you can peer into other people's thoughts. I don't know what the path of progression is for Neuralink. I just think if we're at that starting point, what's going to be the trade-offs, not in a year, But let's say in 50 years or in 150 years, like the thought experiment that we're running right now, I don't believe that the trade-offs that I'd be willing to make is worth it at that point.
Okay, so you're bringing humanity. What else?
Oh, right. There's a second one. Probably bring my journal.
Because of what you've written in it already? Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. My journals are valuable. Mm-hmm. Shit, I might have to change my answer. Not that I've been asked.
Am I supposed to ask?
No.
I wasn't gonna.
If Donald Trump invited you to the White House on Monday, not to confuse you, let's say Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Thank you for the clarification.
If he invited you to the White House and you're in the Oval Office sitting with him there and he says, Dane, what's your best piece of advice? What would you tell him?
I would say make decisions in the best interest of the American people without fear of consequence in your physical body.
That's, of your existence, basically?
Of your existence, yeah. Yeah, I would say make decisions that are going to be in the best interest of the American populace. And don't worry about
getting killed. I think he would agree with you. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would be seen as kind of schmoozing and ass kissing because he already agrees with that, don't you think?
We'll see. From where his donations came from, I don't know.
What do you think is our biggest geopolitical risk? I know you mentioned Iran, but as America, what do you think is our biggest existential
crisis? It's where our money's going. It's going to be overseas. It's going to be going to Israel. It's going to be going to Ukraine. I think it's what Charlie Munger says. If you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. Mm-hmm. And if our dollars are going to and from certain nations and they're not going to and from our own population and our own citizens, our own infrastructure, what's the priority here? Is the priority America? Is it our citizens? Or is it the development of some other nation overseas that my brothers and sisters don't get to see the benefit from?
Yeah. So I know you're single. What's the best quality a girlfriend or wife could have?
Work ethic.
Really? That mm-hmm. is so important, especially if you're going to raise children with a woman. It surprises me that guys don't put that at least in mm-hmm. the top three. What physical attribute would you put in the top three?
Height.
How tall does she have to be?
Doesn't have to be a certain height, but it's really a perk when it's over 6 foot.
So if I was a girl, you wouldn't date me?
No, probably not.
But it's not because I'm ugly, it's because I'm shorter?
The only reason why I'd probably stick around with you is the calves. The calves are just way too nice to...
This is the second episode in a row where somebody's talked about my calves.
That's because they're world renowned. Everyone...
Can the camera see these?
Should Cameraman? Know about the calves.
I might have to bronze them or something in the sun. Since everybody's going to be looking at them because they're so talked about. I did have a buddy one time tell me, if I were you, I would never wear pants.
I don't. You got to show off the legs.
Yeah, but I don't want my nuts swinging all over the place. What he meant was shorts, I think.
Oh, gotcha.
If there was one person that you wish could attend this retreat, if we do it next year, who would it be?
My brother.
How old is he?
24.
How come you haven't referred him to me to do what I've done for you?
Because my brother's young in his self-development journey. And I've attempted to start talking to him on little baby steps, similar to Dave Ramsey's philosophy. And I think the baby step where Coach Brad D'Antonio comes in isn't necessarily baby step one. And we just got to get past the first three. In my opinion, in terms of progression. Because, you know, it's the whole adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. But then you can salt its mouth and deprive it, and it'll probably drink. But besides the point is the individual, in this case, we're talking about my brother, has to want it and has to want to do the things that we've talked about in this podcast and learn and build himself. And I'm trying to introduce him through books and through other avenues, such as maybe learning a different skill and whatnot. And I think once someone goes down that rabbit hole, it gets juiced and the jet fuel gets poured on with personal coaching. It's like the steroids. You got to start lifting. You got to be someone that is a gym rat. You have to get in the gym, but then you want to throw on the steroids. That to me is the coaching that just puts you to the next level.
What do you hope will be the biggest takeaway from this trip?
My hope for the takeaway of the trip is to provide myself with the perspective that we can live a very long life if lived intentionally. So when I hear other people's experiences that are so vast, there's not really, we all value self-development and becoming a better individual, but it's not necessarily like a real estate conference or a stock conference or whatever that is. There's no specific thing that we talk about. It's very broad and very generalized. And so I've heard a lot of stories from other guys that have done incredible things. And I think to myself, because they are older than I am, and I think, man, they've done a lot and I have so much ahead of me. It gives me something to look forward to because I have so many years ahead of me to build, create, develop, fail, learn, try again, continue, and just keep pushing forward because I know I can live intentionally and really feel like I've lived a long life rather than not living it intentionally and having life lived for me.
That's really well said. At what age do you hope to get married? If you had to throw a dart and say, this is the age I'm going to get married.
I don't want to put a number, but I will. I would think before 35. I think the business will be in a place where I can step out of the operations side of things by the age of 30. That's my hope, is to be outside of out of operations at 30 and more on the business rather than in it. And I think after that, things will be taken a little more seriously. But again, I mean, I could go play volleyball when I get back and run into someone that we just absolutely hit it off and she fuels me up, I fuel her up, and we're extremely harmonious and beneficial for each other. And I'm not going to turn away opportunity.
How many kids you want?
Two.
What's the best piece of advice your dad has given you through the years?
Oh, man. My dad's been so influential in my life. It has been work ethic, and I think that's why I respect it so much.
Did he preach it or exemplify it?
Showed it. So that was one thing that I absolutely love, and it's something I hope to resemble in my own upbringing with my own children, is that my dad worked construction, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And one of the things that we would do growing up is we would go to a local grocery store, grab our favorite sandwiches, grab a Gatorade. We'd go watch airplanes take off at the airport and then go see dad at work because dad would be working on some job site somewhere and it'd be right around lunchtime. So I would see my father actually out in the field working and putting in work and leading men because he was a foreman of a contracting crew and he would be leading guys creating some product. In this case, it was a sidewalk. And I saw that with my own eyes. I saw dad working. And we talked about why are men like this in terms of being inferior. And I think that's a prime example because they don't have a real life example of a fatherly figure working. The father leaves, goes to some office space. The child has no understanding of that, comes back home, sits on the couch, watches TV, opens up a bottle of wine or a beer and doesn't do anything for the rest of the evening. And so I believe the child internalizes that in some way compared to the contrary, where they see the father work, or at least they have an understanding of what the father does to produce something. And it gives more respect from a child's perspective for that father. And I'm so grateful that my mother and father did that, whether it was knowing or unknowingly, because I saw my father working and busting his ass in real life that I then was able to translate over through sports coming up, through school coming up, and now into my own business.
I love that. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap?
I've really enjoyed this, and I can't thank you enough. This has been almost over 2 years in the making, and I'm so grateful and blessed to have been able to carve out time in my own life to come down here and see you and be a part of this amazing experience with these guys. And it's something I'll always remember for the rest of my life. So I can't thank you enough, Coach Brad.
Thank you, my man. How can people find you if they wanted to connect with you?
LinkedIn is best. I'm pretty anti-social media. You can find me at LinkedIn. Dane Larsen, L-A-R-S-E-N is the last name. Or you can visit my website, PatosPM.com. That's the business.
Very good. Folks, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you being here. I know you could be listening to anything, but you tuned in to me and Dan, and I, Dane. We have a Dan here, too. And I thank you. You can find me at man_overseas on the socials or manoverseas.com. Thank you, folks.